Everyone, it certainly is a blessing to be able to gather together like this and to be with not just our local congregations, but with a few others who are choosing to tune in to us. I appreciated the sermonette by Mr. Freeman. As he instructed, he told you not to read the Book of Ruth while he was speaking, but to wait until I started. So I'll give you just a couple of seconds to finish reading that. Okay, that's enough. Life isn't always fair, but it often seems to be more unfair to some than to others, and we've certainly seen a lot of examples of that in these past few weeks. How many times growing up have you complained that something just wasn't fair? How come he gets to do that and I don't? Why do I always have to do whatever it might be? I know those were common between me and my siblings. Or other complaints. I never got to do that when I was his age or her age. Everyone else gets to do it. It's just not fair. Now, those of you who are parents have probably heard many, many examples and variations of that. But it's definitely not a new situation. We heard about it in the sermonette. And it fits in well with what I'm speaking about here, because I am going to look at the strange situation of Jacob, Leah, and Rachel. Now, many years ago, I want to give what I'll call inspirational credit for this message to Mr. Pete McNair, who spoke about Leah several years ago. And the impact of that stuck with me, and I knew that at some point I wanted to look into it for myself. So thanks to him for that message. Now, the title I've given this message is, It's Not Fair, and in parentheses, An Unusual Biblical Family. It's Not Fair, An Unusual Biblical Family. We'll be reading a lot out of the book of Genesis because it covers Leah's life during there. We'll start in Genesis 28, verse 1. Genesis 28, verse 1. This is Jacob's command from his father Isaac. Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. So he was told to go to a relative of his. In verse 3, may God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples, and give you the blessing of Abraham. To you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. So he was going to his uncle's house to be with his uncle and his cousins. In verse 6, Esau marries Mahla, the daughter of Abraham's son Ishmael, in addition to his other wives. And then in verse 10, Jacob makes a vow at Bethel, used a stone as his pillow, the stone of Scone, which is now in Edinburgh, Scotland. And then he set the stone as a pillar, and he vowed to serve God and tithe to him. Sorry, pages are stuck together here. There we go. In Genesis 29, verse 1, Jacob goes to his uncle Laban, and he meets Rachel, his cousin. Genesis 29, verse 1, so Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. So they would be gathered around the stone, and then when everyone was there and it was time to water the sheep, then they would roll the stone away and do the watering and then put it back. Now Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." Then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." Now there was an article in a site called womeninthebible.net, which talks about Leah. And that article points out that the men are rather terse in speaking about Laban, and they don't say much about him. "They know Laban well," it says, "and surely if he'd been a good man, they would have said something in his favor. If he had been a good friend of theirs and was a good man, instead of just saying, 'We know him,' they would have said, 'Oh yeah, we know him. He's a great guy. He just lives over that way. And look, here comes his daughter, Rachel. I want you to meet the whole family.'" But they didn't do anything like that. When they asked, "Is he well?" they just said, "He is well." So they didn't really seem to have much affection or respect or emotion toward Laban. In verse 9 of Genesis 29, "Now while he was still speaking with him, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess." Something a little unusual here is that usually it would be a male that tended the flocks, and the male or the oldest son or the father would have brought the flocks there. So this may indicate that Rachel had no brothers. We don't know. There are none mentioned. And verse 10, "And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother." Jacob was smitten with Rachel. It seemed to be love at first sight. And he immediately went over and rolled the stone away when he saw her coming. And the note in this above article says that normally it takes two or more men to do this. So he really wanted to impress her. Verse 11, "Then Jacob kissed Rachel." Well, that seems to be rather sudden, but she was a relative after all. "And he lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative, that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father." She was so glad to hear that, she wanted to tell her father about it. Continuing in verse 13, "Then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things." Jacob told Laban all these things. "And Laban said to him, 'Surely you are my bone and my flesh.' And he stayed with him for a month." So they made him feel very welcome there. But after he'd been there a month, then Laban said to Jacob, verse 15, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?" Now, it talks about his two daughters. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. This description about Rachel or Leah's eyes, we don't know exactly what it means. Some other translations say they were tender or weak or cloudy, or maybe there was no sparkle in Leah's eyes. In Arabic, the name Leah means wild cow. Now, if you're talking about cow eyes, those eyes are big and beautiful on a cow, but on a person, if you saw someone with big bulging cow eyes, that would not be very attractive at all, and it would drive people away. But we aren't given a full description, and maybe it doesn't mean anything like this at all. It could be just that if they say weak or cloudy or tender, It may be that they were just a lighter color than the people around them. If everyone else had dark eyes and someone with blue eyes comes around, that person would be different, would stand out. And her eyes would be the first thing that people noticed about her. A couple of translations. One of them is the Holy Bible from ancient Eastern manuscripts, edited by George Lamsa. And also the Living Bible, if you're looking at a Living Bible today, those translations say that they were attractive or lovely. But since the next part of the verse contrasts Leah to Rachel's beauty, it's more likely that her eyes were lacking in some way or were noticeable in some unattractive way, some way that called attention to her eyes is the first thing that people noticed, and not in a favorable way. We don't know too much about Laban's family. His wife is not mentioned. We don't know if she's living or not. She may have died. And if so, that would make Leah responsible for running the household. And it could be possible that Leah was even present when Jacob met Rachel. We don't know. Maybe both sisters were there. As mentioned above, we don't know whether there were any sons in the family. So the only thing we know about is Laban and his two daughters, the elder one, Leah, with the strange eyes, and the younger one, Rachel, who was very beautiful. So in where we left off, Laban had asked Jacob what his wages should be for serving him. And in verse 18, now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." And Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Now we've all noticed as we get older how quickly time goes by. A week goes by, a month, a year, you think that 5 years, well, that wasn't that long ago. That's the way it was for Jacob. These 7 years just flew by. They seemed like only a few days to him. 21. And Jacob said to Laban, now he's fulfilled his duty, he served him for 7 years. He said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her." Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. So they celebrated this upcoming marriage. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me?" Now you may wonder how and why that could happen. Wouldn't Jacob notice that it was Leah instead of Rachel? There are a few explanations for this. One is brides in those days were heavily veiled and clothed. And you know, even today, if you see people with masks on, it's a little harder to recognize them. Now, if their whole face was clothed or veiled, it would be hard to tell who's who. And Jacob had every reason to believe that this was Rachel. That's what he was expecting. And in his mind, everything would just lead to fulfilling that expectation. Laban certainly knew that Rachel was the daughter that Jacob wanted to marry. Jacob had made that very clear. But they had been feasting and celebrating, and Jacob's mind may have been a little cloudy. Maybe he was not drunk totally, but on the verge of it. And you could say that maybe the sisters' voices may have been similar enough that Jacob couldn't tell the difference. Or maybe Leah didn't speak at all that night. We don't know the details. We just know that Jacob was expecting it to be Rachel, and instead it was Leah. Who would have known about this? Jacob didn't know what was going on, but others certainly did. Laban was the head of the deception, so he knew. Leah and Rachel both had to know what was going on. because Rachel should have been there and Leah should not have. Now, once Jacob found out this and questioned it and debated and argued about it and complained, once Jacob found out, then Laban offered an explanation. And this explanation is given in verse 26 of Genesis 29. And Laban said, "It must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years." So he was married to Leah at this point, and Jacob said, or Laban had told her, "It's not right for the younger daughter to be married before the oldest one." He said, "Sir, me, fulfill her week and then serve 7 more years, and then you can have Rachel." Actually, fulfill her week, and then he would have Rachel as his bride also. But in payment for that, he would have to serve 7 years. Now, it apparently was the custom in that part of the world, at least according to this explanation, that a younger daughter couldn't be married before the oldest one. And if we give Laban the benefit of the doubt, he may have assumed that Jacob knew about this, and he knew that he must marry Leah before Rachel, but that's stretching a little bit in my mind. I think Laban knew very well what he was doing and why. Whatever happened, Leah was put in a very difficult situation. If Laban had allowed the marriage to Rachel to go ahead, Leah would have been very humiliated. She would possibly have become unmarriageable. People would have been skeptical about her, thinking there's something wrong with her since her younger sister got married before she did. But at the same time, it was very humiliating to her to be foisted on Jacob, married out of duty rather than out of love. And either way, she knew she wasn't wanted. For her, I'm sure she had the feeling it's just not fair. But it goes on to tell more about Leah's life. Verse 28, Genesis 29, "And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel, his wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid." So now, at this point, Jacob was married to both daughters. We aren't told anything about how well these sisters got along. As sisters, they probably got along well enough. But in any marriage with multiple wives, there's bound to be conflict between the wives. Consider all the wives of David and the children of each of the separate wives and the disputes that went on there. If two of those wives are sisters, the conflict would be intensified. And that was the case. What would Jacob have thought of this? Jacob's appraisal of the situation was possibly one of thinking that it's just not fair. It's not fair. Laban knew what I wanted. Why didn't he just explain up front that I would need to marry Leah first? Given time, I could have helped find a suitable husband for her. And you can be sure that if Laban had made this clear that Leah had to be married first, that Jacob would have done everything he could to find a husband for Leah. He would have gone all out to do it. So was it fair? Was it fair to anybody? Was Jacob treated fairly? Was Jacob treated fairly? On the surface, it doesn't seem like it. It seems like he and both ladies were put in a very awkward situation. What kind of man would use such trickery as Laban had used? Well, what kind of man would be so deceitful as that? How about Jacob himself? We won't turn back there, but consider Jacob's rivalry with his brother Esau. His father Isaac favored Esau, but his mother Rebekah favored Jacob. And we hear incidents about the birthright and the blessing, how Jacob cheated Esau out of both of them. The birthright, if you want to just make a note, is talked about in Genesis 25, 19 through 34. And you'll remember how Jacob prepared a stew. And when Esau came in from the field, just exhausted, he asked Jacob to give him some of the stew. Jacob demanded that Esau sell him the birthright in exchange for the stew. Esau was so hungry that he felt near death and agreed to do it. I didn't put those in my notes, but I think he said something like, what good is a birthright to a dead man? He thought he was that near death. So he agreed to give up the birthright, give it to Jacob. And then the blessing is covered in Genesis 27. Most of the chapter talks about that. When Jacob's father Isaac was old and had bad vision, he asked Esau to hunt some game to make some savory food. Rebecca overheard this and told Jacob to go out and kill some goats so that Jacob could bring the food to his father. She was going to deceive her husband about that. She even dressed him in Esau's clothes, put goat skins on his hands and neck so that he could pass as Esau. So to a man with poor eyesight, Jacob would smell like Esau. He would have the hairy skin that his brother had. Through this deception, Jacob also obtained the blessing from his father. Deception apparently was nothing new to the family, and the deception of marrying Leah rather than Rachel was probably appropriate turnabout and payback for what Jacob had done to Esau. And he was getting what he deserved in a sense. But regardless, from the beginning of the marriage, Leah was not loved. And this is emphasized over and over. She was unloved no matter what she did. Genesis 29, verse 30. And Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban still another 7 years. Then we get into the issue of children. Verse 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb. Rachel was barren. So things are going to become more complicated in this family. In Genesis 29, 32 through 35, we read about Leah bearing her four sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. And each time she thought that Jacob would finally love her with this son that she prides. Verse 32, so Leah conceived, bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. This will do it. I'm bringing him a son. Verse 33, then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. She called his name Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son. Now remember that we're reading this verse after verse, but it spread out over a long period, several months. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. And Rachel had been barren and is still barren. Therefore, his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah, and she stopped bearing. So now both women were barren. Leah was doing everything she could to gain favor from Jacob, but she just never received the love from him that she was hoping for. It was a tragic situation and definitely not fair to her. And now she's stopped bearing children. None of this was her fault. There's nothing else she could have done. But Rachel had her problems too, because now she was becoming envious of Leah. Leah had borne him four sons and Rachel was barren. But this is about to change in Genesis 30, verse 1. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" Compare Jacob's attitude to that of his father Isaac. Back in Genesis 25:21, if you just want to make a note, in Genesis 25:21, now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So he took a humble attitude toward, and he pleaded with God. And Jacob seems to take kind of an angry, aroused attitude toward it. Well, then we go on and find more children coming, not from Rachel, but from Rachel's maid, Bilhah. She bore him the sons Dan and Naphtali in Genesis 30, verses 3 through 8. And then Leah's maid Zilpah bore sons Gad and Asher, verses 9 through 13. So at this point, there are 8 sons, 4 from Leah, 2 from Leah's maid, 2 from Rachel's maid, none from Rachel. Genesis 30, verse 13, then Leah said, "I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher, and this was the son of her maid. Well, she may have been happy at the time, but she still wasn't loved. She wasn't as loved as Rachel was. Now we come then to the story about the mandrakes. In verse 14 of Genesis 30, now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." There's a website called godasagardener.com. that I looked to for information about the mandrakes. And I said that many Westerners just can't make much sense of this story. In early peoples, though, the mandrake was associated with a superstitious belief that it promoted fertility and conception in barren women. It was consumed in very small amounts, cut into an amulet to wear on the body or put underneath the bed. The Genesis story revealed that Rachel and Leah believed that the mandrakes promoted conception. Both Leah and Rachel wanted children. Leah wanted additional children to win the regard and affection of Jacob. That just wasn't happening. And Rachel wanted children to validate herself as a woman. Rachel was so desperate to have children that she was willing to have Jacob spend the night with Leah to get possession of the mandrakes. Now, we don't know whether Jacob believed in this or not, believed in the mandrakes, but Jacob spent his nights with Rachel, knowing she wanted children. In verse 15, now this is Leah's response after Rachel had asked her to share the mandrakes. She said to her, "Is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" This seems to bring about a shift in Leah's attitude. She is becoming somewhat more confident, even if still not loved. She thinks of Jacob as her husband because she has borne him sons and Rachel has done nothing. And it may be giving her a little bit more self-confidence and self-esteem, giving her things she needs, not giving her love, though. Verse 16. When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. So she called his name Zebulun. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Six sons from Leah, two sons from her maid, and a daughter, Dinah. Still nothing from Rachel, two sons from her maid. Genesis 30, verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. And his family is becoming quite large, a little too large to dwell in the same place as Laban. So Jacob asked for his wages. He asked for all the speckled and spotted sheep and goats and all the brown lambs, and he works to ensure the growth of them. He controls which animals mate, and he tries to take the healthier one and especially encourage the speckled and spotted sheep and the brown lambs to increase. In verse 4, so Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock, said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. And we don't have a record of how he changed these wages, but Jacob, Laban was certainly trying not to give Jacob what he had agreed to. So they flee from Laban, Rachel and Leah and their handmaids, their families. Genesis 31, verse 14. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. So it sounds like Rachel and Leah had actually been disowned by Laban, or Laban had wasted all their inheritance. In some way, there was really nothing left for them. Genesis 31, so they flee. But Laban isn't happy about that. Verse 26, Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you've stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with a sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp, and you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now, I don't know if what we read from about Laban, I don't know if he would have actually sent them away so joyfully like that. But Jacob and Laban agree to a covenant, and Jacob's family departs in peace. And that's all covered in verses 43 through 55 of Genesis 31. But the story of Leah still isn't quite over. In Genesis 32, Jacob is about to meet up with his brother Esau. And he feared trouble. And remember now, Jacob had cheated Esau out of the blessing and the birthright. And he was kind of afraid to meet up with him because Esau had become very rich and powerful. So Jacob wrestles with God, who changes his name to Israel. In Genesis 33, when Jacob and Esau are about to meet, he fears trouble, and he divides his family in groups by wives and maidservants. The two maidservants and their daughters are up in front, where they'd be the most vulnerable. And then Leah and her children behind them. And then Rachel and Joseph last in the most protected section. So still, it's made very clear that Rachel is loved much more than Leah. There are problems also later with her daughter, Dinah. Dinah was defiled by Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, and Dinah's brothers insisted that the Hivites be circumcised, after which they killed all the males among the Hivites. So that was a little smirch, I guess, upon Leah's daughter as well. Well, Rachel dies in childbirth. Now, we read about this in Genesis 35, verse 16. Then they journeyed from Bethel, and when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath, Rachel labored in childbirth, and she had hard labor. Now, it came to pass when she was in hard labor that the midwife said to her, "Do not fear, you will have this son also." And so it was, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. And Jacob set a pillar on her grave, which is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. Now, Rachel's death is emphasized in part because she died during childbirth, and it was a very tragic situation. But it talks about the effort that Jacob made. It talks about where he buried her and the pillar that he put on her grave. Somewhere along the line, Leah died. We don't know. It's not mentioned specifically. But we read about it in Genesis 49, 29 through 33. Then he charged them and said to them, "I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephraim the Hittite." This is Jacob speaking near death. "In the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephraim the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah." It's almost as an afterthought, so just mentioning it in passing. Oh yeah, Leah was buried there too. "The field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. When Jacob had finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people." So Jacob talks more about the burial site itself than he did about Leah and her death. She was just kind of treated as very, I don't want to use disposable, but that might be the way he felt. Well, through all this, what was God's purpose with Leah? Why did she put through all this? What was her role? Well, Reuben is Jacob's firstborn, but he's not the one who will begin the line leading to Christ. Rather, it will be Leah's fourth son, Judah. Judah was the kingly line, this son of Leah. David was in this line, and later on, Lord Jesus himself, according to the flesh, came from the line of Judah. Reuben lost his position as the firstborn because of his sin. Levi was the priestly tribe. Leah was the mother, some of the outstanding sons of Jacob. And this, that last section I quoted from the Through the Bible commentary by J.V. McGee. So Leah through Levi and Judah had two of the great lines of Jacob. Was Leah ever really happy? It sure doesn't seem so, because she was never the first love of Jacob. She did everything she could. She bore Jacob six sons and a daughter, but she's always described as being unloved. Well, we have all had times in our lives when we feel rejected by others, probably not to this extent, but sometimes it does seem unfair to us. Things just aren't working out the way we think they should. It's unfair. We need to realize that we don't know exactly what our purpose is in God's great master plan. The time will come when it will all be made clear to us, and we will see why we were brought up exactly the same way we were. What we feel is unfairness in this life may turn out to be of vast importance in God's overall plan for our lives, and then we will find out that God truly is fair.